low moral fiber.
I don't think you should drink that.
Well, welcome to the podcast.
Hello.
We can stop now, Ben.
You look bad for me.
Considering I was wrong and stupid.
On sets, it makes me feel great.
And wow.
That's pretty good.
Like I could.
Can I keep a head for a souvenir?
Take all the world.
I fully endorse day drinking.
All right. I like it.
Hello and welcome, Galactic Mercenaries, to another stealthy episode of Men of Low Moral Fiber, the show that always uses at least 12 switches to open any tiny little door. I'm your host, Ben Helms, and with me as always, and for the first time recording in the same room with me, is my first-person thermal detonating, dark trooper-destroying, general mock-defying older brother and co-host, Jason Helms. How's it going, man?
Man, it's going great. Yeah. And we're in the same room.
I know. I can see you. This is weird.
It's really odd. I feel awkward.
You're still not wearing clothes or pants, but you know.
And it's even more awkward now.
It's true. True. I can see everything.
And it took forever to get here. I had to go through like 12 different elevators. I was flipping switches. How do you have a chasm in your house that I had to jump across, speed jump across? I mean.
Yeah, as you mentioned, I mean, Dark Forces is one of my favorite games. I've modeled most of my life and architecture around the gameplay the game.
It's a cool game. It just seems inconvenient.
It is. This is true, but really fun and really worth it in the end.
Absolutely.
When I finally do get to see my family after 3 hours struggling with random switches and my locks.
Yeah.
So if you haven't read the show title that you probably clicked on, today we're going to be chatting about the 1995 LucasArts classic first-person shooter, Dark Forces. And this game was just super fun, right?
It really, really was. I remember looking forward to this game so much when it came out. And hoping so bad that it would hold up when we played it again, and it super did.
Yeah. Yeah, it really, other than a few pixels here and there, the gameplay was pretty dang flawless. It was super fun.
Very replayable.
Very replayable, yeah. So today I'll do a quick rundown, and then we'll get into it. But we're going to talk some of the history, talk about what went into the making of Dark Forces, what went into the development, release, that kind of thing. Then we'll dive into the gameplay. We'll talk about all 14 levels, how fun, how frustrating, that kind of thing. Then we'll play a death-defying round of What's the Beer, What's the Song? And finally, we'll talk a little bit about next month's game. And of course, you can always find out more information about this game and other ones we talk about at our website, menoflowmoralfiber.com. Okay, no more dilly-dallying. Let's get into it. Where did it all start?
Well, it depends on how far back we want to go, but I say it started with Doom.
Okay, all right. Getting out of the LucasArts realm.
Yeah. So Doom was a first-person shooter in 1993. That was hot on the heels of Wolfenstein 3D. Wolfenstein 3D, real hit of a first-person shooter, opened up the first-person shooter genre by putting textures on walls. That was the big technological achievement. Once they did that, you could feel like you were in a Nazi bunker. You could fight Mecha Hitler. And then Doom really upped the ante.
Real quick, did you fight Mecha Hitler?
Yes, but I cheated to get there.
Okay. But you played Wolfenstein.
Oh, yeah, I played Wolfenstein. Okay. Oh, yeah. Now, I had a friend named Justin Ferris who was much more into it, had played all five sequels or however many.
Also not allowed to play the game.
No. None of us were.
Right, but you did all the time.
All the time. Right. It was so good. We had to keep these ones hidden, and, you know, it's like, Wolfenstein 3D, what game is that? Oh, it's a historical fiction game during World War II. So we're learning about Nazis, we're learning about the Allies, you know, all this stuff. Just don't ever look at the game while I'm playing it.
Solitaire. I'm playing solitaire, Mom.
There's you know, basically three things that you can kill in fiction, and you can kill them however bloody you want, and it doesn't count. You got Nazis, you got demons, and you got stormtroopers.
Okay, I think you're gonna say Nazi demons.
Nazi demon stormtroopers, which I think is what the dark troopers really were.
That's how they describe it. Yep.
Accurate.
That's right.
So Doom came out shortly thereafter. One of the things Doom did really well is they made the game really modifiable. So it was a fun game. It was a great game. But they were really, really smart in terms of making the files really accessible to people to modify.
Yeah, that was cool.
So some real enterprising modders out there did their hacksering. Yeah, that was the cool 1990s.
Well, who made Doom, too? We should mention this
quickly. Oh, it's id Software. So Wolfenstein and Doom, both from id Software. John Carmack, John Romero.
John Carmack of Oculus Rift.
Of Oculus Rift.
Getting bigger every day, yeah.
John Romero of a bunch of games in the 90s that weren't great after Doom.
Right.
Daikatana, I remember that one still. Anyway, moving on.
All right.
Some enterprising young modder came up with a Star Wars mod of Doom. Switched out all the sprites of the demons to stormtroopers, probe droids and some kind of weird staticky looking Darth Vader silhouette.
And we'll link to this in the adventure post about this episode on our website. But we looked out a couple of videos, the YouTube videos of this, and it looked like Dark Forces. It was really cool looking.
Yeah. And the mod was actually done of Doom 2, I believe, although there were some early ones of the original Doom. With Doom 2, somebody made what's called a total conversion, abbreviated TC, which is where you change everything. You change all the sprites, you add sounds typically, and it's a completely new game, as opposed to just a small mod. You might even use the original levels from Doom, but all of a sudden now the demons look different. Now they look like Mickey Mouse or something, and you get sued.
I gotcha.
But yeah, so people at LucasArts saw the mod and thought, oh, we can do that. And as you listen to interviews with Darren Stinnett, for example, we'll talk about the production team in a second. You can hear that they are very open about the fact that they were inspired by Doom.
That was really cool to me, is that this is Dark Forces is often referred to as the Doom clone. That's what we did when we first got into this project. We're like, oh, that's the Star Wars Doom.
Yeah.
That's what we thought of it as. And it, in a lot of ways it was, but it was cool to hear the interview with Stinnett. Where he's basically, they asked him that question. They're like, oh, there's a, and they're kind of tentative in the question. They're like, oh, there was some similarities between Dark Forces and Doom. What do you say to people about that? And he's like, yeah, no, we got a lot of things from Doom.
We're totally inspired by Doom. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And in fact, the rumor is, and I haven't seen this one confirmed, but the rumor is that they actually reverse engineered the Doom engine. I have no idea how that happens, what that looks like, but that's awesome.
Screwdrivers, probably.
Screwdrivers, lots of screwdrivers, hammers, blowtorches.
Yep. But then they created their own engine, which they referred to as the Jedi engine.
And it was actually a better engine, or at least had more going on. And, the notable improvements were the ability to look up and down, swimming, some different kind of textures on the ground, so you could have ice that you would skate across and things like that. But also the big one, and this is kind of just weird to describe, with Doom, you could go upstairs and downstairs, but no room could ever be on top of another room.
So I never realized until we did this research.
Yeah.
Because I remember going upstairs and stuff in Doom.
Yeah.
But I guess it never doubled over where you had been previously in that level.
Exactly. Yeah. If you ever took an elevator, you came in one side and came out a different side.
Right.
Because otherwise, that hallway would be on top of the one you were just on.
Right.
Okay. They used it to full effect in Dark Forces. And as we talk about the game, we'll get into this a bit. But the labyrinthine levels where you're jumping from one area to another and you can see the area you were just in down below.
Right.
You couldn't have that in Doom, especially because now, you know, you'll fall down below and you'll have to climb back up to the area you were just in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And that was some of the coolest parts of the levels, just kind of winding around vertically, and every part of a level you're climbing up and up and up. Frustrating when you fall down.
Yeah.
But just really cool and dynamic, and it felt like actual architecture. And Stinnett actually talks about when he was creating these levels with the team, he bought a few architecture books and read through them just to make sure he was making structures that were not only like structurally sound. I mean, these weren't real structures, but architecturally interesting.
Yeah.
And interesting places to walk through, not just a bunch of hallways next to each other.
And he even got in touch with a architecture professor at Berkeley.
Okay.
And she connected him to her students who she said loved playing video games, and they helped him understand some basic architectural principles as he was designing levels and things like that.
And we got pretty deep into the Jedi engine and the Doom processing power, and what was it called? Ray projection.
Yeah.
John Romero.
Carmack.
That Carmack invented and to make the processing power of Doom and the walls and everything just much faster than anything before. I don't think we should get into that now.
No. We're going to link to it in the show notes. Yes. And as always, go to menoflowmoralfiber.com.
Yep.
Check it out. The show notes are going to be deep, but there's a fantastic history of first-person shooters.
Oh, yeah.
That we got to link to. It's a great read.
It came out like a month ago, too. Yeah. Really recent.
Yeah, very, very recent, and really goes through all the developments. It's a cool one.
Yeah. So we can kind of read some of the credits and talk about those guys a little bit. So Stinnett was the project leader, Darren Stinnett. Programming was led by Ray Gresko, but also Stinnett and Winston Wolfe had part in that. And then the cool thing I thought, lead artist, so all the graphics as well as the story.
Yeah.
Two things that don't seem related to me.
Right.
In the programming side, were both led by Justin Chin, who basically got a lot of the credits for the storyline.
Yeah. Yeah, Chin really is the kind of the heart and soul of the game in the sense of the story, the look, the feel of it.
Yeah.
Gresko created this engine, this amazing engine,
yeah.
With the help, again, of Stinnett and Wolf. And then Stinnett is the guy who made it all work. Right. He had the vision to move it forward. At least that's my understanding of how it broke down.
Yeah, we listened to an interview with Stinnett, but we scoured the internet high and wide and far. And we couldn't find a lot of kind of in between the credit interviews or stories or anything like that. So that's, I believe, all we have. Any other kind of behind the scenes or making of stories you got?
Oh, yeah. One thing that got left out. There is on the box art, you can actually see the map of a level that takes place on a Star Destroyer. And you can see an entire Star Destroyer as the map.
Oh, that's cool.
This was originally supposed to be the first level, and that's where you would get the Death Star plans.
Nice.
And yeah. It was so cool. And the decision by Stinnett, read in an interview somewhere, he said, yeah, we loved this level. It was awesome. It was amazing. But it was too hard for the first level. It's too much going on. And if you remember back to the first level is like three rooms. It's pretty simple, pretty straightforward.
I managed to screw it up, but yes.
Yeah,
you're right. You're right. No puzzles.
No puzzles.
Opening doors.
Open a door, get a key. Open another door, get the plans. Leave.
Right.
I mean, really, really straightforward. And it makes sense. I just wish they would have been able to figure out a way to jam that Star Destroyer into the storyline somehow, because that is so cool.
Well, you get the Executor at the end.
Yeah.
But you're right. Yeah.
And I believe it's pronounced Executor.
like Executor.
Yeah.
Like it's someone who manages someone's estate.
Someone's estate. Exactly.
Right. He manages the other Star Destroyers.
That's a valid point. It's the Death Star, and after it's died, its estate has to be managed.
Thank you. There They're you not go. Small ships.
No, no, it's a good point.
I'm an idiot. Okay.
No, I pronounce it Executor all the time, because that's what the word is. There's no word
the Executor. Right. No. Good, good. You want to talk about the release at this point? Or
sure,
wait
go for
okay,
it.
Yeah. So this was one of the highest selling video games, period, just in the 90s.
Yeah.
It sold almost a million. Oh, it's probably sold over a million now. But as of 1999, it sold 950,000 copies.
Yep. And it was released in 95.
Yes. Thank you. And it became the highest selling LucasArts games, LucasArts game of all time, at least that we can find that's trackable, over a million copies, which is kind of insane. I don't think I would have guessed that. I would have guessed Monkey Island. I would have guessed maybe Day of the Tentacle, something that when we say, hey, we're doing a LucasArts podcast, people are like, oh, have you done this? But I guess people do say, oh, like Star Wars.
Yeah.
That's Lucas and Star Wars, pretty synonymous. So
do you remember the hype well?
I don't.
Yeah.
I was 10 when this game came out. I remember playing it a bunch. I don't remember the hype around it.
This was probably the first game I pre-ordered.
Wow.
I'm not sure if that was a thing then or if it was just our local video game store did it.
Because it was San Rafael.
And said you could get dibs on it.
Right.
Like it was less fancy than real pre-ordering.
Right. Liz over at GameStop.
Yeah.
Or no, at Electronics Boutique.
Electronics Boutique. Yeah. You remember it. Absolutely.
At Northgate Mall.
Yeah. And would buy it beforehand, show up. You had to get it the day of and go home and play it like crazy.
Yeah.
I just remember talking through it with my friends, but we were building it up so much. It was the dream, putting together Star Wars and first-person shooters.
So much more satisfying than Rebel Assault, too, which came out a couple years before.
So much more satisfying.
Which is super frustrating and never had those rewarding moments of walking across the bridge of a ship and seeing a battalion of stormtroopers or even just shooting stormtroopers up front. It just didn't seem... Shooting TIE fighters in Rebel Assault was very satisfying.
Yeah.
It felt like you were Han Solo or Luke Skywalker. But this game just had, like, that seems like nothing compared to Dark Forces. And running around the hallways of Imperial ships like Luke Skywalker and Han Solo actually did in the movies and shooting them and them flying. And then it seemed much more cinematic.
Well, and we talked about this a little bit with Rebel Assault, that the dev team really came from a place of loving sci-fi and loving video games, and slowly were brought into liking Star Wars as well.
Right.
This is, you know, for Dark Forces, there's a team that loved Star Wars and had never done 3D video games before.
First-person shooter before, yeah.
And so they were new to the first-person shooter genre, but they loved Star Wars, and they brought that love, and it shows.
Oh, that was cool. Stinnett was just like, we're huge fans.
Yeah.
And we're huge fans of Star Wars, and we're huge fans of Doom. So let's make Star Wars Doom and make it even better than watching Star Wars and even better than playing Doom.
Yeah. Cool. And one of the things I read about this is that somebody had written it up as the best Star Wars game of all time. What they said is it's not the best video game that is based in the Star Wars universe. You know, you could argue about TIE Fighter. You could argue about more recent ones, maybe Battlefront.
Yeah.
But Battlefront doesn't feel like you're playing Star Wars.
Right.
It's a cool game.
It's an RPG.
That has...
It's an open world,
Yeah, that has fun Star Wars elements.
Right.
But Dark Forces, and this was the argument the author made... really feels like you're playing a lost mini episode of Star Wars.
Yeah.
It feels like a Star Wars story.
And this, well, speaking of which, this game might be rediscovered. Again, I guess it's been 21 years since it came out. So we missed the 20th anniversary, but this December 2016, Rogue One is coming out. And I'm kind of going dark on Rogue One. I'm trying not to see teasers and trailers. But years ago, I knew when Rogue One was coming out that the general plot was it comes out before Episode 4. General plot.
General plot.
Comes out before Star Wars, the original Star Wars Episode 4, A New Hope. And the plot to Rogue One is not the Bothans, because that's Return of the Jedi.
Right.
But it's Rebels stealing the plans to the Death Star that end up leading to the explosion of the Death Star at the end of A New Hope.
Yeah.
Which is the first level of Dark Forces.
Yep.
And that's the demo that I played a couple months ago. And that blew my mind when I played that. Because I haven't seen Rogue One. It comes out in 6 months. But to me, just being able to play something that I've thought about since I can even remember memories watching Star Wars and everything, this is something that's been in kind of the mythos of this world that I love. Being able to play that as Kyle Katarn, who's the main character, was super cool.
Yeah.
It's not the best level in the world, but just the idea of like walking over here and picking up the plans and then walking back to your ship, that was super cool to me. Very cinematic as well.
Oh, yeah. The demo came out a few months before the game, and I remember playing it and just being so excited. And there's the big hologram of the Death Star in that first level.
That was cooler than the actual plans themselves.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. You walk and you could walk through it. And you could see it like projected on your gun, it felt like.
Yeah.
Like it really felt real. And I remember that being, even in the demo, just the coolest thing ever. And I was in. I was so in.
Yeah, we're spilling into gameplay at this point. But I guess real quick, some of the criticisms, and it was hard to find.
Yeah.
No game is perfect, though. The ones that I found were, it seemed like the game, critics said the game seemed too short.
Yeah.
Which I thought was interesting just because it didn't seem like that way when we were playing it.
Right.
It seemed like every level was linear, but also almost open world in the sense that you could choose other paths to go. There's only one way to end a level.
Yeah.
But you didn't have to open every door if you didn't want to, but you could also open up dozens of random doors and interact with things in ways that you didn't have to. We looked at a walkthrough book just to kind of figure out some of the puzzles and to get through the game. But it seemed like there was always a critical path method you could go to finish a level, or just a wandering path that you could go just to look at really cool things that weren't vital to figure out the storyline of the game, to solving puzzles, but were just cool because the makers of the games were fans of Star Wars and they wanted to include these things.
Yeah, and the game encourages that kind of exploration, not just by having secrets and having cool stuff to look at, which is wonderful.
Yeah.
But even when you finish a level, the level doesn't end.
Right.
You get to a point and it says, okay, press escape to get to the next level,
which
is weird. Right. But the whole point of that is so you can continue to explore the level.
Yeah.
If you don't want to be done yet,
right,
it's kind of encouraging you. Yeah, you can blow through this game quickly, but it's got really high replay value. So make sure to go back, spend some time with it, maybe change the difficulty level and do some more on it.
I think we should get to maybe more criticisms or things we wish were in the game after we talk about gameplay.
Sure, yeah.
I have a couple, but yeah, let's kind of jump into the gameplay. So the setup of the game, the setting of the game.
Spoiler alerts from here on out. Go play the game.
Yep.
And then listen to this.
Yep. So yeah, you are Kyle Katarn, who is a mercenary employed by the Rebel Alliance. He used to be some part of the Empire. I don't think we know.
An Imperial officer.
Okay. And the story centers around you as a first person. You discover the Dark Trooper Project, which Mon Mothma tells you about after the first level, I believe, which are basically just souped up mega armored stormtroopers that the Empire has created to wipe out, of course, the Rebel Alliance and everyone who sides with them. And some of the characters you see, I can go over that too.
Absolutely.
Are Jan Ors, who is your sidekick? I don't know if sidekick, partner.
Your mentor, actually. She's the teacher.
Oh, mentor.
Yeah, she's the one who...
Really?
I read a little bit about it.
She doesn't do much other than fly you around.
No, she's the one who... she was a spy for the Rebels.
Right.
And infiltrated the Empire and actually convinced Kyle to leave the Empire and join the Rebellion.
She's a double agent.
Because Kyle had joined... Yeah, we're going to get geeky.
Yeah.
Kyle joined the Empire because he was told that the Rebellion had murdered his family. And then he finds out from Jan that no... The Empire murdered his family.
Every time I hear the name Jan, I just think of Michael's girlfriend from The Office.
Absolutely.
Jan took him to Jamaica.
Yep.
And sandals.
Well, it's a very similar relationship. I mean, Jan is his boss.
True.
You know?
They fall in love. We don't know that, actually.
Yep. And I think Kyle's really a middle manager anyway.
That's true. That's true.
That's
until
very accurate.
The sequels, which yes. we won't talk too much about today. Yes. We'll play them eventually and do episodes on them. They sound really good. They sound like probably the most stable, highest rated game, Star Wars games,
yeah.
period.
Yeah.
Maybe other than the new Battlefront, but over the years for sure.
But with the sequels, he actually gets a lightsaber. He becomes a Jedi.
Right, right.
And that was the plan for the original, but they just couldn't get it graphically to work well. And it was taking too much of their time. They said, ah, scrap it. We're just going to do shoot 'em up. And we'll work on him becoming a Jedi in later levels or later sequels, which is funny because a lot of the real hardcore fans feel like him becoming a Jedi was a betrayal of the character. It's like, no. The character was sculpted around the fact that graphically they couldn't get the Jedi, right. the lightsaber to work. Right. So.
Right. Logistics sometimes have nothing to do with the true nature of a character.
Yeah, exactly. So,
but yeah, there are a lot of books in the kind of extended universe or whatever they call it now that center around Kyle Katarn and his adventures. But he's very kind of Han Solo-ish in his kind of anti-hero, frowny guy, but always saves the day. Ends up becoming a Jedi. We'll talk about those in future games.
I'd say a little gruffer than Han Solo.
Yeah.
Less comedic.
Yeah, that's true. Less leading man-ish.
Yeah.
That's true. But yeah, Mon Mothma, if you remember from Return of the Jedi, or even if you don't, she's kind of the one leading the way as far as giving you your missions. Then there's Crix Maydeen, who's my favorite action figure that I'll have some pictures.
Ben full-on has a Crix Maydeen action figure sitting there staring at us as we're recording this right
beautiful.
Now.
He's a beautiful man.
And it's from the early 80s when the action figure was released. I mean, it's
inscribed on his leg.
Yep.
I have two original Star Wars action figures. And I lost one recently. But yeah, Crix Maydeen and the Reptar.
No, I can't get it.
Rancor. The Rancor trainer, the big belly guy who cries
Rancor
dies. Yeah, so two Return of the Jedi characters. And then there's General Rom Mock, General Mock, who is the Imperial general who creates the Dark Trooper and is out to get you the whole time. Jabba the Hutt makes an appearance towards the end. General Mock, you can't – I guess you should.
Yes, salute. General Mock.
He's a general. But yeah, as far as the only thing I needed to do before jumping into the game was configure some of the mouse and keyboard stuff. So if you do download this on, I believe we got it on GOG.com again. Yep. Thank you, GOG. Please pay us to keep telling people about you.
Thank GOG.
Thank GOG. This game is available. But yeah, we'll share some information on how we kind of configured the mouse and the keyboard to kind of best represent the original release of the game and how FPS games were played back then.
We won't
with WASD with the mouse combined.
Yeah, we won't waste the time on the podcast to tell you the intricacies of that because you won't want to write them down anyway, but we will put links in the show notes.
Yeah.
Not only to that, but also do a short description of exactly how we got the game to work on Macs because this was complex.
It was.
I was running a virtual box inside a virtual box inside a virtual box at one point.
Right.
And
Windows...
So,
two within Windows and then back to Mac.
Yeah.
And yeah. Or no, I guess it was all within a Mac too.
Yep. But we finally got it to work.
Yep.
And we'll walk through that in the show notes. It's a lot simpler if we can just write it out.
It's
for
more
you.
Boring than what we're talking about now.
So if you've got a Mac, you can play this, even if it's only for DOS. And it
doesn't cost anything extra than what you pay for the game. Yeah.
It'll require a little bit extra work.
Yeah.
But it can get done.
And just, you can always email us or go to our website and contact us if you have questions about that. But yeah, we should start talking about just kind of our favorite parts or what it was like playing the game.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was like being inside Star Wars.
Yeah.
It was just so many moments of wonder.
Yeah.
I think a feeling of moments of surprise and terror were some of the cool ones that stood out to me. So like at one point, Jabba captures you, steals all your weapons. Puts Jan in a prison cell and then throws you into a pit with a Kel Dragon.
Oh my gosh.
Have to fight him barehanded.
Did you know what a Kel Dragon was before this game?
Yeah, and I'm trying to remember what video game taught it to me.
No, there was I'd never heard of it.
There was some Star Wars video game where you had to fight Kel Dragons. Okay. It might have been Super Star Wars.
All right.
Because I remember it being side-scrolling, whatever it was. It was probably Super Star Wars.
Okay, yeah. And you have to fight the Kel Dragons with your fists.
Yeah.
Which seems impossible.
And it felt like it at the time.
It was borderline impossible.
It was, and we played it on easy.
We played on easy, and we even ended up using cheats a few times.
Oh, so yeah.
We're nerds.
Oh, yeah.
Bad nerds. But, yeah, the game was super fun. The gameplay isn't as diverse as Rebel Assault, which might be the only or one of the very few knocks on it. Another one would be the lack of multiplayer.
Yeah.
We played it together last night, and it would have been really cool to split screen that.
Absolutely.
Or even landline it and play on two different computers or something. And either co-op, which was pretty rare back then, or battle.
Yeah.
Both of those would be super fun with this engine.
Jeez, but now I'm thinking about co-op. That would be amazing on this.
Co-op
game.
Would be perfect for this.
Wow.
Especially when you think of all the puzzles.
So many things.
You have to stand over here and hit this switch while I hit this and run. Yeah, that would be really cool. So yeah, there's definitely ways we can improve the game, but we shouldn't focus on that because the game was pretty great.
Yeah.
I think my favorite part, we should jump into that rather than just describing 14 levels, we talked a little bit about it, but the first level.
Yeah.
And just the close tie in with not only the very first Star Wars, but also with the upcoming Rogue One and just the simple task of shooting stormtroopers.
Yeah.
Which was just as satisfying as in Rebel Assault, shooting TIE fighters out of the sky or out of space. Just really fun. Like you said, it's you never feel bad about shooting stormtroopers. They're evil. They represent the most evil thing in the universe. They're guarding it. You shoot them. It's okay. You never feel bad. But just really fun and very, it felt like you were in the movie. Like you said, running around the halls of an Empire space, finding the plans, doing something that you'd only heard about as a kid in this game was very satisfying.
Yeah, and it stayed true to the movies also in the sense that the stormtroopers were terrible shots.
Totally.
Totally terrible shots, which is canon.
It was interesting when we watched the Star Wars Doom, the Doom that had been modded to look like Star Wars, the characters, the walls, everything, the environment. And one of the stormtroopers moved laterally, moved left to right.
Yeah.
And that seems so weird because in Dark Forces, which came out after this mod, that never happened. Yeah. They just kind of walked towards you slowly shooting.
Yeah.
And the fact which that they would move horizontally, which is what stormtroopers did in the movies. But yeah, I thought that was really cool. One of my favorite parts, which had nothing to do with the gameplay, but towards the end, you're sneaking around an Imperial ship and you walk into this hangar bay, smoke some stormtroopers, and you look up and there's just this TIE fighter, huge TIE fighter. I mean, life size, seemingly way bigger than you in the game, and bigger than the stormtroopers. And it's just kind of floating around this big hangar as you're fighting around it, underneath it, kind of, you can shoot at it, but it's just your blasts go right through it. But it seemed bigger than life. And the word I keep going back to is cinematic. It seemed like you were in the movie, the TIE fighter's flying right at you. And you can look up screenshots of this and it's very pixelated, bad graphics. But when you're playing the game, you're 20 minutes into this level, you're shooting around, you're peering around corners for stormtroopers, and you see this giant TIE fighter flying at you and just circling this hangar that you're fighting in. It made a big impression on me. I thought it was a very cool moment.
Yeah. No, that was also my favorite moment. Really, the best aspect of the game is just feeling like you were in the Star Wars universe.
Yeah.
The willing suspension of disbelief kicks on pretty quick.
Yep.
No matter how old the graphics are, and you're there. So we had talked about Rebel Assault already. Rebel Assault really promised this and then failed to deliver it. This is the first game that really delivered it.
True.
We were so hungry for that universe, and it seemed at once so close and yet so distant. You know, we could watch the movies, we could do this, but you could never really be in it. And for the first time with Dark Forces, I felt like I was actually there. Just like the Star Wars movies, it's filled with so many little moments of wonder.
Yeah.
Like the TIE fighter you mentioned, but like little stuff like Jabba's mural on the Jabba the Hutt level, there's this giant mural of Jabba the Hutt, which, like, of course he would have a giant mural of himself. Right. It would be a secret door. Or the busts of the Emperor.
That was cool. Yeah. That was a cool level.
Yeah, it was a great level. And you know what? One of the coolest little details was those little wheeled droids, the little mouse droids.
Yeah.
It's constantly just skating around you. You can blow
squeaking,
them up, you can shoot them.
Yeah.
And they're the only things in the game that I felt bad blowing up.
True. They're trying to run away from you. Yeah.
Yeah. I always kind of identified with the mouse droids. I always kind of liked them. Thought they were nice little pets.
True. They're always running away from Darth Vader in the movies before he gets on the scene.
And actually connected to that, my biggest disappointment was that there's no Death Star. The original idea of this game is true. You know, Stennett says, you know, how cool would it be to actually play Doom on the Death Star and to be walking around the Death Star? And I'm like, that's true. That would be cool. Why didn't you do that?
Right.
There's
sequels.
That's a minor quibble.
Right. I mean,
exactly. It's a cool game.
Exactly. And they honestly wouldn't look that much different other than the cutscene before the level started. Wouldn't look that much different than some of the ships that the game does take place
on. And imagine how big that level would be.
True. If it was just an actual like open world Death Star you were fighting on.
I can't imagine how frustrating that would be.
Yes. So let's get into that. Some of the most frustrating parts or hardest parts were, and the reason this isn't just a Doom clone or Wolfenstein is the intricate, sometimes intricate puzzles.
Yeah.
Which often revolve around different switches and buttons you have to press.
Yep.
then run to another place. Usually they're not timed, but occasionally they are. You have to run to another place, hit that switch, which opens up a door that you have to run into. It takes you to an elevator. Very contrived, but you know, well-authored often, intricate puzzles that you have to navigate on every level.
Yeah, I think on the last level is a series of conveyor belts, and there are parts you've got to duck under and parts you've got to jump over.
Yeah.
And if you miss one of them, you'll go into a room.
Yeah.
And you don't know what room you're supposed to go into.
That
so it's not like you at least have to just jump or duck. It's like you have to jump, duck, and then know when you're not supposed to duck so you can get led off the escalator into the next room.
Yeah.
It was nuts. I don't know how people played this without walkthroughs.
We ended up dying a few times, and then at one point I would just read the walkthrough while Jason played it, and it was just like, okay, now duck, now go left, now jump, now go left. Like, it was just crouch and jump at the same time.
And if we haven't promoted GOG.com enough, they actually include the full strategy guide.
279-page strategy guide, whatever it is.
That is a really fun artifact of its time.
Yes.
Where it's telling you, like, turn around the corner and you'll face a bevy of stormtroopers.
Steal yourself.
Don't stop blasting until they stop screaming. Right. Right. So good.
It is very well written. Very funny to read the walkthrough. I think the puzzles, which I think just LucasArts is known for at this point, probably at that point, was known for their puzzle games, usually their adventure games. But I was thinking about comparing the puzzles in Dark Forces compared to those of Monkey Island, Maniac Mansion, Day of the Tentacle, Zack McCracken, those adventure games. And it seems like these ones were easier is too simple of a word, but more manageable. And it seems like when I beat a puzzle when we talk about a game, like the squeaky mouse toy in Day of the Tentacle,
right,
and trying to get that freaking mouse toy away from that cat, I don't know how we would have ever figured that out if we weren't doing it together.
Yeah.
Even then it took a couple hours. But it seemed like every puzzle in Dark Forces, we would have gotten eventually by ourselves and did get eventually by ourselves. Even without a walkthrough or whatever, it just would have taken a long time.
Yeah. The downside is, the puzzles in those adventure games, they're weird, but they're always somewhat believable. You're always
and they're
like,
clever.
Yeah, okay, I could use a crowbar for that. That makes sense.
Oh, the bed squeaks, and the cat likes squeaky things, so that makes sense. He'd go towards that. Yeah.
I can't tell
they're logical.
I can't tell you how many times in this game I was like, really? Is this how the stormtroopers get around? Do they jump from platform to platform to hit a switch?
Right.
And then jump back? Is that every time they take a bathroom break? Like, right. Like what goes on here?
Yeah.
Because, you know, there's 8 switches and you have to jump across 3 platforms to get to them.
Which, again, if you're just walking around shooting things, I get that there needs to be a kind of a deeper level to these levels.
Yeah.
Not just run around, open a door, shoot, run around, open a door, shoot. I'm glad that these puzzles exist, even though they are frustrating.
Yes.
But it also simultaneously made me surprised that the biggest critique was that this was a short game.
Yeah.
14 levels and probably 8 of them had these puzzles that would have taken hours.
Yeah. And that's a constant critique that I hear and that I never really buy.
Yeah.
Because I think when you're thinking about that and, you know, the game was too short.
Yeah.
What you're really saying is I didn't get enough game hours per dollar spent.
Sure.
And I don't think that's the measurement it should be. It should be I didn't get enough moments of wonder. I didn't get enough aha. I didn't get enough fun.
Yeah.
And just lengthening a game doesn't add fun.
True.
Instead, you could end up with a game. Dark Forces, I think, has one of the best ratios of time spent playing it to moments of wonder.
Yeah.
You really have a lot throughout.
Yeah, definitely. So, any other gameplay criticisms, critiques, fun stuff?
I think it's time for us to get on to 2 specific questions.
Sounds good.
This game's pretty fun. Frustration when I was all done. I just had 2 questions. What's the beer? What's the song? I can't always tell. I just wanna know what game is West
D12. Am I going first this time?
Yeah.
All right, I'm going first. We're doing beers and then songs. All right. So first off, we have I'll kind of describe the beer a little bit, the game. So it's a long game. I thought it was a long game. It was really fun, really high replay value, very accessible in the sense that you could give this to, I think our wives would play this and figure it out pretty quickly. You run forward, go turn left and right, and you shoot people. So pretty simple, very accessible, but at the same time, not overly simple. So there, all the F1 through F10 and the number pad 1 through 0, all the, you know, there's so many different weapons you can do, so many different functions. I could see how that could be overwhelming.
Yeah.
Even though it's a very simple start. So for that, I chose Orval.
Oh, nice.
Which I think you've mentioned before.
Yeah.
You chose it in a previous game. And to me, it's one of the... There are perfect beers out there, which for me mean I can drink it almost any circumstance for the same reasons. Yeah, I mean, it's just a classic beer. You can get it just about any bottle shop in the world, probably. It pairs well with just about everything. Really refreshing, but at the same time, really complex. And just something I can always go back to.
There might be no better beer than Orval.
Yeah.
Even Westy 12, which I haven't had, but I've had clones of. It's got to be for special times.
Yeah.
But Orval, you can have whenever. It's just so perfect.
I think five years from now, I might just be like, oh, I want to play that level of Dark Forces.
Yeah.
Go back and play that. I want to see that TIE fighter flying around or whatever. Yeah. Put it on God mode, run to that part, and just look at it. Just really fun to go back to.
Absolutely. So for me, this was really a question about Dark Forces. To me, is a perfect mixture between two things that I love.
Okay.
It's like a Reese's peanut butter cup, right?
Okay.
Peanut butter, chocolate, it's going to work. Star Wars, Doom, amazing. So I picked a beer that is a little bit tough to find. It's not one of those rare sought-after beers, but it's just rare that you'll find it. And it's a perfect mixture of a brown ale, an English nut brown ale, and a Belgian ale yeast. Tilburg's Dutch Brown Ale.
Yeah.
Tilburg. I haven't had it in years.
One of the coolest labels, too.
It really is.
Yeah.
It was one of the first homebrews I made, was trying to clone
that.
I don't know that I came close, but
right.
I came into that idea of, here are two things I love. I love a nut brown ale. I love Belgian ale. What happens if they meet? And so it's the old, you got your Star Wars in my Doom. No, you got your Doom in my Star Wars.
Right.
And all of a sudden, everything's perfect.
And Stinnett would say yes to both of those.
Yes. Yeah. Yes, we did.
That's what happened.
And you're loving it.
Right.
So... I'll continue now with the song.
Do it.
All right. So my song, I'll give you a couple hints and see if you can get it.
Sounds good.
I'll just hint about the album first. The album also released in 1995, just like Dark Forces.
Are we going to have the same song?
I'm so worried. Yeah, we
okay.
are. I'm
All
almost
right.
positive.
All right. How are you almost positive? Did you look at mine before you picked yours?
Because
then you'd know.
No, okay. No. I just know what led into it, why we would both choose it.
Interesting.
All right. It has on its cover, first off, it's sci-fi themed.
Nope.
It has on its cover the blaster gun that inspired Han Solo's DL-44 blaster.
Different than what I chose, but I see where you're going.
On the cover of this album, of course, it's Buck Rogers' XZ-38 disintegrator.
Right? Nerd.
Nerd. Yeah. No, don't worry. I had to look that up.
Nerd. You're the nerdy guy on the Star Wars podcast about video games.
And this is a special song that's going out to Courtney Love. Do you know the song or the album?
It's the self-titled Foo Fighters.
That's correct.
Is it Stacked Actors?
No.
Oh, is it?
It's a song that for years he said was not about Courtney Love. And then finally about 5 years ago,
five
said,
lawsuits come later.
On. Come on, clearly just read the words. It's about Courtney Love. So the song is I'll Stick Around by the Foo Fighters. And just like Dave Grohl, Dark Forces doesn't owe you anything.
Yep. Yep.
And the original plan for the video, I found out while doing research for this, was to have a very overweight version of Courtney Love dancing throughout the song.
Just because.
Dave Grohl vetoed that idea from the director.
Good
said, no, no, it's a little too on the nose. We're not doing
that. Yikes. Oh, wow, that's rough. Okay, so my song, I didn't see when it came out. Let me look it up right now, actually. My song came out the year before that, actually, in 1994.
Nice.
So it led up perfectly to Dark Forces.
During the development, yeah.
And it really doesn't have any lyrical connection that I've made, at least yet. You can go home and listen to this song and see if it does. But it's a very long song, just like this game was to me. It's not boring or stale, though. It keeps you interested throughout the song. Keeps you coming back. A lot of replay value. One of my all-time favorite songs. And it is Only in Dreams by Weezer.
Oh, so good.
God, I've played this song hundreds of times on both bass and drums and guitar, actually.
Yep.
In that order.
Yeah.
Growing up, just hundreds and hundreds of times played this 8-minute song, this ballad, just so many times.
Didn't you love learn bass just for this song?
Yes, I'm sure I did. Very simple song. Very dynamic, though. A lot of highs, a lot of lows, just like this game. Sure. But yeah, I think that's all we got. I think we can jump into next month.
Next month.
Yeah, you know, should we do any research about it?
Nah.
Okay.
Steven Spielberg. Yeah,
so next month we are playing
The Dig.
The Dig.
The Dig.
Yeah. Originally conceived by
Steven Spielberg.
Steven Spielberg. That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was supposed to be, I don't know how much of the script was written. I don't know if it was a full length feature, but originally the idea behind it is it was supposed to eventually be a full length feature film by written and directed by Steven Spielberg.
Yeah, and I kind of like that when we preview these, we haven't done the research yet. We
not
just
at all.
Remember vague
yep.
things.
Yep.
So what I remember of it, I played it first at the Marin County Fair. LucasArts would always set up a little booth there and let you play whatever was coming next.
Yeah.
And I don't remember getting through much, but I just remember thinking, oh, this game looks like the coolest thing ever. You're an astronaut that discovers some alien artifact in a dig of some kind.
Right. Not a dig.
The dig. And I believe that in discovering it, you get transported somewhere and then have some amazing adventure.
Yeah. Yep. That sounds about right.
And the takeaway I think I've read since is that it's an interesting game. It's a fun game. But it lacks the humor that LucasArts really was known for. And
yeah.
So that's kind of the knock against it. So
I thought it was an interesting knock against it. But yeah.
If you're going to jump on, you're going to play it before the next episode. Maybe if you lower your expectations in terms of humor and expect a more serious game, it'll be really fun.
Yeah. More puzzle based than humor based, I guess, like a lot of the previous ones. Less cartoony.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I think that's all we have this time. Go out and play, if you haven't already, Dark Forces. Just a really fun game to go back to. We'll be doing future Dark Forces games. There's 3 or 4 dozen of them. I don't even know yet. But we'll do some of those ones eventually in the coming months. If you have any suggestions on what games you want us to do next, please let us know. If you have any musical interludes or drops, let us know as well. Send those our way. But yeah, you can always check out what we're doing, what we're up to, any cool articles we're writing or refer to on our website, menoflowmoralfiber.com. Thanks so much for downloading and listening. I have been Ben.
I will be Jason.
And as always, I'm a mighty pirate.
And I should have kept working for the Empire.
See you guys.
Later.